Is there an independent judiciary in America today? The sudden death of Associate Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia and the passionate debate about his replacement raises a question that he often asked in his talks with law students, that when judges make decisions that try to settle an unsettled political debate, then the judge becomes the target of political accountability. And hence, our Supreme Court and even our full federal judiciary has evolved in just a few decades into a collection of conservative and liberal fiefdoms where votes can be anticipated. At all levels, have we lost this idea of an independent judiciary? Have judges become an arm of the legislature? Are black robes suddenly blue and red? Justice Barbara Pariente is a Florida Supreme Court justice. She joins me now. Welcome back to The Takeaway, Justice Pariente.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
It seems that, all of this debate and discussion, and some of it very, very inflamed and passionate, really raises the issue of a very old concept, and that is an independent judiciary. And I'm wondering if, with all this discussion of liberal, conservative, political accountability for judges, whether they vote in particular ways, if we've really lost sight of an independent judiciary at all level in the federal and state system.
I agree with you, and I deplore labels such as activist or conservative or liberal, because we do forget that the third branch of government, the judiciary, was designed to protect citizens against the excesses of power by the other two branches. And when we evaluate a judge by a label, we are really missing the point of our branch designed to be a non-political branch of government.
You know, one of the things Justice Scalia used to say, and I don't want to talk about his record, other than abstractly, he said that he was approved 98-0 in the Senate, and he doubts that he could even get approved today. And he claimed that if judges' decisions are going to preempt political issues, that therefore they're going to be politically accountable in battles like this in the Senate. Do you go along with that?
I think that perhaps there is truth to all of this, which is that we are seeing political rhetoric that has inflamed the other two branches coming into the third branch of government. And surely we do understand that with our founding fathers, they intended for the president to nominate and the Senate to confirm. So they must have envisioned there would be some political fighting. But once appointed, the judge is obligated to decide cases without regard to politics, the influence of special interests, or public opinion polls. So there is a dichotomy there, a tension for sure, between the appointment process and the obligation of a judge or justice once he or she is appointed or elected, as it may be in the state court system.
Would you say that in issues like redistricting and even in Obamacare, if you look at the way in which the challenges have come to bear on the healthcare bill, that some in the Congress and some in legislatures at the state level view the judiciary as a kind of shadow legislature where they can kind of – they're not appealing a legal decision. They're basically going to a different window in the government to get a result that they like.
Well, that is the way those that don't like a decision play it. And that's what's so unfortunate. The phrase legislating from the bench, it has become one of the labels or phrases that is used for judges that interpret legislation. Conservative judge is a conservative judge, one that enforces or upholds the Fourth Amendment, or enforces and upholds the Second Amendment or the First Amendment. So you see, it really is admires the and confuses, I think, the issue. Our job is, when we are presented with legislation that may be ambiguous, is to interpret the statute using standard rules of statutory construction. Somebody calls that legislating from the bench. That's really demeaning what goes on in a judicial decision. But what is critical is that you do not make a decision based on your personal opinion or on the public opinion polls. And that certainly was true at the time of Brown v. Board of Education. If the justices on that court had made a ruling based on popular opinion, they would have gone the opposite way. And if we had a federal judiciary that was subject to elections, we would have had judges that ruled that way removed from office.
How do you think all this political tension plays in situations where judges are actually elected and are held accountable by the fact that they have to stand for office?
The whole point is that we are trying to have judges that are insulated from politics. So in the federal judiciary, you have the protection of lifetime appointments. And that came as a result of one of the primary grievances in the Declaration of Independence. The king has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices. That was to say that he would remove judges who he disagreed with. In the state judiciary, Florida, for example, has a merit selection and retention system, and that system was passed to protect judges from politics. But special interests and dark money has indeed come to the third branch of government, and that's why we look to our citizens to hopefully remind them of the critical importance of having judges who render decisions based on the law and the facts and the Constitution, and not with fear that they're going to be removed from office if they render an opinion that's correct legally, but one that's not popular or one that's not what those in power would prefer.
Justice Barbara Pariente serves on the Florida Supreme Court. Justice, thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.